Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome all to the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach. Thanks for being here today. I have a fun guest in store. This is a radio play-by-play NBA analyst from the Brooklyn Nets, Chris Carino. You know him. He has FSHD, has the Chris Carino Foundation that's been very successful. I believe it's been like 15 years since they've been doing that. Along with so many other things that Chris has done throughout his broadcast career. We talk about those things, of course, me being a sports guy. The Nets are kind of my second team because of Chris. I like listening to his play-by-play, gets you right into the game. I had some fun questions. I asked him about that, so that's in store. You want to reach out, please do so as well here with our show, FSHD. Society.org is the website, but FSHD Radio at FSHD Society.org is the email. So you can reach out to me if you want to be on the show. Maybe have a featured guest you'd like to nominate, so to speak. I'd love to hear from you. We always are looking for people to share their story. The word that comes out of this episode is inspire. Who do you inspire? You try to. When you are inspired, what do you do with it? We talk about that a little bit today with Chris. Very interesting. Definitely a topic I didn't expect to go through or to. We also talk about his amazing Hall of Fame career. That's right. He's Hall of Famer now. And we discuss that and what that means to him as well. So many things to unpack in this episode. It's very robust. A lot of great things that we talk about. Chris is phenomenal. I'm so blessed that he's gives his time to this little podcast that, I bring to the community and everything he's doing to help our community in fundraising and research and so forth. We cover all of it and then some. So without further ado, here's the conversation with Chris. Imagine a day filled with hope, community, and unstoppable movement, where every roll, stride, and smile brings us closer to a world without FSHD. The Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD is the FSHD Society's nationwide event series that brings together families, friends, and supporters to fund groundbreaking research and strengthen the FSHD community. Whether you roll, walk, volunteer, or cheer, you are part of something meaningful, a movement for change. Each Walk and Roll is a celebration of resilience and connection. People from all backgrounds come together to share stories, raise awareness, and help move research forward, building a future where no one faces FSHD alone. Join thousands across the country who are turning hope into action through every roll, stride, and show of support. Walk and Roll to Cure FSHD. Move together. Cure FSHD. So in the microphone seat with me here, kind of a pinch me moment. I didn't say that before off air because I didn't want to embarrass myself completely. I'll just do that in front of everybody else on this podcast here. It's Chris Carino, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets. Chris, always an honor to talk to you. A lot of fun to talk to you. I'm kind of a little bit of fanboyish. I kind of listen to some of your broadcasts, even here in Milwaukee. You know, it's the Bucks over here. But what you do, the way you use your voice so well, calling games, which is not an easy task at all, especially in basketball, such a fast-moving sport. Thanks for spending the time sitting down and joining us here on the podcast.
But Tim, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and you remind me, you know, being in Milwaukee, you remind me of the 2021. You know, the Nets were a toe away from perhaps preventing Milwaukee from winning a championship and maybe winning one of their own. And unfortunately, more fortunately, depending how you look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, wasn't there like the joke that if his shoe was a different size, it would have
Yeah,
been.
so Kevin Durant
Yeah.
hits a game-tying shot in game seven to force overtime, and his just they the tippy top of his sneaker was on the line, or else it would have been a three, and the Nets would have won the game,
Yes,
and that
that's
was in the
right.
second round. Eventually, the Bucks go on to win the championship, and that's as close as the Nets, big three ever got. But we digress. I mean.
That's tough. That's tough. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you recall your call on that situation?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because I was cognizant when he took the shot. When he originally took the shot, I didn't see the official's hands go up
Okay.
to signify a three. So
Yep.
I just called it as the shot is good, and then I looked to the scoreboard to see what they put up. And then I said, his toe was on the line. It's a two-pointer. It's a tie game. And then they went and reviewed it. But so I wasn't in a position to see his toe on the line, but I knew it was close. And I don't want to jump the gun and say it until I
Right.
see it. Usually looking at official,
Yeah.
they're the ones to tell you. And then if you, because th those are tough. I always say you come down to games that you could never practice a big dramatic call. Because in my experience, I've always found that as much as you can dream it up in your mind, it's never going to happen cleanly like that. There's always going to be some wrinkle, and you have to be open to just describing it as it happens and not try to plan it or practice it. You have to make sure that the thing that makes it so tough is you have to be emotional in the moment. But you have to also remain in your mind so in control that you're not missing a detail.
I always found it interesting that when broadcasters do the local, so to speak, right? You're the
Yeah.
voice of the Nets, right? You're not, there's other sports that you've done. So in the comparison, you talk about emotion. I mean, you must be a Nets fan then.
I mean, listen, I've been working with the team
Yeah.
In some capacity. I started as a producer out of college in 1992. So you're talking 34 years that I
Wow.
have been employed in some way, shape, or form by the Nets organization, which started in New Jersey and then in Brooklyn. So I was 24 years old. Or no, I'm sorry, I was 22 years old when I started. So,
Okay.
it's been most of my life I've devoted to the team. So
Yeah.
obviously, I am.
You're emotionally
It's
vested.
more than a fan. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do pride myself. I'm a national broadcaster for the NFL and things like that, NCAA tournament I've done, and where I'm a neutral national announcer. So I'm, and especially in New York, I don't, in New York, there isn't, the Homer thing doesn't really work.
Yeah.
It may work in some other cities. It doesn't really work in New York because you have so many people that don't have your allegiance. And so I broadcast from a Nets point of view,
I like that.
but knowing that most of my audience is probably Net fans, but also cognizant of there are a lot of neutrals. And especially now that some of your games are on Sirius or whatever, so nationally you're people hearing it. So I want to give you the game and I want to share the emotion of what it's like to be in the arena. And I'm going to give it from a Nets perspective most of the time. And I am going to show emotion for the Nets, but not in a way that's over the top, one-sided, irrational. I'm going to be fair,
Yeah.
but
You're not
I'm
just going to
going.
scream and lose your mind completely.
I may, I, you know, if
Okay.
I, if they win a game
Okay.
seven in the NBA
Yeah.
championship, I am going to get excited for the Nets. I'm not going to get
Yeah.
excited for the other team, but I'm also going to genuinely share my emotions. So sometimes I think you hear some announcers in local markets where the other team will have this exciting moment and they go monotone where you can't even tell what happened.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that, not because I want to support the other team, but I'm going to give it to you in a way of like emotionally to the negative a little. You may say if the Bucks had hit a shot to beat the Nets in a championship or wherever, a conference championship or something, I may give you a, oh, it's good. The
Yeah.
Bucks have won it. As a as opposed to
Okay.
saying, and it's good, and the Bucks have won it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a difference there.
There
Yes.
is. It's a subtle difference.
But it's still the emotion of the moment. So you're being true to the moment. And that's kind of it's kind of where I always find it very interesting when I listen either to any sport, honestly, but comparison to, yes, doing a national event where it's maybe you're not following this particular team, you're just doing the event. So you talked about NCAA, talked about NFL. In all the sports you've covered, what's the most difficult that you found to do?
Difficult to me is not, I've been doing this so long, I don't find any of it difficult in terms of I love it. Like the play by play is happening in front of me, and I can do play by play. It's like it's not difficult. That where the difficult comes in is number one, doing it well, like being on top of it. Really, it's your stamina, it's your energy. And when I did the NCAA tournament for Westwood One, I didn't do it this past year. I've done it, I don't know, about six or seven times over the years, depending if my schedule fits or what's going on with Westwood One and where I can get to, whatever. But it's I'll do the first two rounds. So you go to a city and I'll do four games in one day. And it's eight teams
Jeez.
that I might do a game or two during the year, but it's most likely eight teams I have not seen in person yet this year. It might be eight teams I haven't even watched a game. I mean, I'll go into
Right.
the it I'll that week I'll watch the games, on tape or something to get ready for it. But that, and when you're doing a national broadcast, like you said, you've got to get excited for both teams. It's not like when a player is an offensive-minded player, he could rest a little on defense. No, it's like both teams have the ball. You've got to get excited and have the energy. And you do it for four games.
That's a
And
lot. Jeez.
just getting your voice through that, and you're having energy when you started at 11 o'clock in the morning at that arena, and now it's midnight,
Gosh.
and you're in the second half of a big college basketball game. It's the hardest thing I'll do all year. There's not even a question.
The marathon of it all.
It's incredible. You get to about halftime of game three and you go, why do I do this? Like, why did I ever agree to this? And then when it's over, you're like, wow. Like anything that's difficult, and this is probably a parallel for what we go through having FSHD. It's like when something is really challenging, it's also very rewarding when you get through it. So, yeah.
It's always though the distance then you put yourself from it then you're like, okay, wow, I just did that. And it went
Yeah,
from
you look
four
back and you
games in a
go,
day. Like, whoa, how did I do that?
yeah, you do look back at it with the next day when you're just totally exhausted. You do look back and you go, wow, in the end that was fun. And then you do two games on the next day and it's like cake. Like, only got to do two games today, and they're huge Sweet 16 games. So, and it's fun, and then you get through it, and you're like, all right, I'll do that again if they ever ask me to.
From the perspective of it, kind of forgetting the labor intensiveness and the exhaustion I can imagine that you would feel after all those games. That's a lot. Does and I'm sure FSHD plays a part in the exhaustion side of it, right? I mean,
It
FSHD, at
can.
least for me, leaves me more tired probably when I can tell than from the average person that's in my life with me. You know, it's like
I don't know. Like, people say that all the time. I go, I don't know what it's like to not have FSHD. So
True.
I don't know if I would just normally be tired because I'm 55 or, but I don't know. It's just, I will say this, though. I mean, logistically, there's issues. Now I use a mobility device, and I use a power wheelchair, and so that becomes complicated as how I get to where I have to be and the routes to my locations and travel, it becomes a huge issue. And mentally, that takes a toll on you. You can't just, I can't just find flights and show up and do things like I did when I was able, when I was able to 20 years ago. There's
There's a lot
just
more
way
involved.
more layers of complications to it. I need people to help me, and so that becomes mentally exhausting. But then in a way, there's also parts of it that, and we can get into this, that I'm now, it's now easier. I'm in my chair, and man, I can do things a lot easier. There's a lot less worry involved. The hardest time of my life were probably the 5 years leading up to me using a power wheelchair,
Really?
because I was worried, how am I going to get out of a chair? Worried about falling down. Just a lot of different things that I was preoccupied with that I'm no longer preoccupied with. There were times where I used never used to be able to, it was so hard for me to get out of a chair. If I knew I had to get up and down a few times, I just wouldn't sit down. So I'd be on my feet for 4 hours.
But that's
And
makes
that's
matters worse.
exhausting. And then that makes it where you may fall because you're tired. And so there's a lot of things like that. And even when I have foundation events, and it'd be the kind of thing where I would just be on my feet for hours talking to people, hugs and think, and you're worried about somebody hugging you, falling down. I don't worry about that now. Or I used to just be tired from an event. I'm less tired now because I was sitting down for 4 hours. So there's things
Makes
like
sense.
that.
Yeah, so it's been there's been some freedom in a way, mentally, physically to some degree too, then.
This disease is something, it's progressive. So when you can hide it and pretend it doesn't bother you, or and there you can be like everybody else for a while, and then you hit a point where it's becoming really challenging and difficult, and then you become stubborn, and then you become, I can do this myself even though I can't, and you envy people that are able-bodied because they can do things with ease that you can't. So you try to be like them and emulate them as long as you can, but then you're suffering in silence because you're pretending you don't need help with stuff when you really do, and then you're avoiding situations because you know how hard it's going to be, and then finally you have this moment where you think, well, these mobility devices and things that are helped to try and help me be independent are not meant to separate me from the world. They're actually made to help connect me and be myself. And suddenly now I'm free to be myself. I'm not worried about hurting myself. I'm worried about just being who I can be. And yeah, there's a lot of logistical challenges, and there are definitely days when you're frustrated and you want to be not thinking about these things like everybody else. But you face the reality of your situation. And now I'm going through life more comfortably now. Even though physically it's more challenging, logistically it's more challenging. There are definitely things that have now been taken away from you that you cannot do anymore. But at the same time, I'm more comfortable, if that
That's
makes sense.
fascinating. Yeah, it does. It does. Because of that progression, as you mentioned, I mean, you can kind of see it coming, the changes. I think most of us fight it. I'm included in that, right? That I don't know if it's about admitting it. I mean, I know it is what it is, but if I can just shield it off, I find myself saying, okay, maybe someday, but just not today. Like today I can still stand up, I can still take the walks with the dog. Okay. I'm a lot slower. Maybe I'm a little more leery when it's especially here in Wisconsin, as you may know, you get snow and inclement weather where you are, I'd imagine as well. So when those days hit, it's like, oh, it changes your thought process and how are you going to manage that day?
Tim,
It's pretty interesting.
you know how many years I went where I It was challenging. I couldn't really go outside if it was windy.
Oh my gosh.
And then suddenly, when you use a mobility device, you're like, all right, I don't, the wind doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah, it's not a factor.
Like it literally could knock me off my feet. It's just not, because I lose my balance just a little bit and you're going to go
Yeah.
down. And it's funny because the first time I ever tried it, we were on vacation in Aruba, where we have a timeshare in Aruba, and we go every year with many friends and things. And it's a gorgeous island. It's a in the outside the hurricane band, so it's perfect weather all the time. It's a desert island. It's near the equator, and it's very, very warm. And the thing that makes it bearable is there's always this beautiful trade wind. 20, 25 mile an hour trade wind. But it got to a point where I worried about walking around and I couldn't, I was always walking, looking down, thinking, I don't want to lose my balance. I don't want a gust of wind to take.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you can rent mobility scooters down there. You know, there's a lot of
Wow.
older people and you go on vacation. There's a lot of ways to do it. They'll deliver it right to your hotel.
Nice.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to try this where I'm down there. Nobody knows me. I'm not preoccupied by what I look like. I'm going to try this while I'm on vacation. I'm away. And suddenly you're going around and I'm scooting around and I'm not worried about the wind anymore. The wind is actually now my friend because it's keeping me cool.
Yeah.
And when I'm going on paths and places, I'm looking up. And I'm looking at the beautiful palm trees and the clear skies and the ocean surf. And I'm not looking at my feet to make sure I'm not going to fall.
Yeah.
And you realize, wow, why was I resisting this? You know,
Yeah.
that
Do you ever figure that out? Why?
because I want to be viewed as everybody else. I don't want to be viewed like people look at me and take pity on me and
Yeah.
think I'm not capable, because that's the one thing. You get through it and you go, well, I mean, once people get used to you in it, seeing you, you realize that, you know, you may have been projecting these things on other people. This is stuff going inside your own head. People don't
Yeah.
really care.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure there are a few people that look at you and go, there might be, and then they start doing something else and they don't even think about you. But
True.
I've always, you know, and Tim, I'll say this, and I think this is something that you find yourself becoming. I've been in the disability community basically since I was diagnosed, but until you're visibly, even though you think you're hiding it sometimes, but people see there's something different when you're in a mobility device. There's always this view, this fear of being viewed differently and being not capable. And when you do some of the things that I do, and you're able to achieve things in your life, and you say, all right, I'm going to show you I'm capable now. And people call you inspiring, right? You get that all the time. You're inspiring.
Yeah.
There's a section of the disability community that bristles at this a little bit. And the distinction is, I want you to be inspired by me. Like I think everyone should aspire to be as inspiring. Anyone, no matter who it is,
Yeah.
should always aspire to inspire people. Right? There are so many of those self-help, motivational kind of people. They don't have a disability. But their challenge is to, they want to inspire you. And if you're in the disability community and you have the ability to inspire people, you should do that. The thing is, I want you to be inspired by who I am and by what I've accomplished and what I'm challenging maybe you to do and the way to look at your life differently. I don't want you to look at me in the grocery store and just go, oh, you're inspiring because you're able to shop for groceries. Like, that's not the fact that I was able to get out of the house today.
Yeah.
Like, that to me is where people in the disability community, they get a little prickly when you say you're inspiring. What a, I've always, I might have said this before, but it's almost like, you know, that Goodfellas line where, oh, you're funny. Oh, funny how? Like, what am I, a clown? I make you laugh? It's like, well, you're inspiring. All right. How am I inspiring? Is that my goal in life? Is I got to make you, you know, feel better about yourself? No. But if you go, if you see me in a grocery store and go, look at that guy. He's independent. He's got a smile. He's looking for oranges in the produce aisle. Like, not that I want to make you feel bad about things or go, oh, it could be worse. Like, no, I'm not saying that. But if you've been thinking, you've been down on yourself and you've been sluggish and saying, I don't even feel like getting out of bed today.
Mm.
And you go, hey, there's a guy who's got every reason to feel bad about himself and not get out of bed.
Mm.
But he did it. You know what? I got to do better. If just seeing me out, I don't know, if that inspires you to do something better, the thing that I get upset is if you say I'm inspiring and you do nothing about it. Like, all right, you find me inspiring. What is inspiring you to do?
Right.
Even if it's inspiring to learn more about what I have or who I am and donate and help people that have it. If you're going to say somebody's inspiring, like, don't just say it, be it.
Be it. Well, it's kind of like our thoughts and prayers, right?
Yes.
Easy thing to say. What are you doing? It's all action. You can have, I coach baseball, young men in baseball, teenagers going into early adulthood. And I, just this last off season, we have a classroom in our facility and talk about certain things before we get into the physical aspects of whatever the day is going to bring us. And my little speech to them was more or less mental game. People talk about it all the time. Mental game, or in your situation, what you just talked about, Chris, is, you know, inspiring. But at some point, there has to be a physical action to your mental game. There has to be something you're actually doing. Sitting there, thought is thought. It might make you feel better. It might gear you up to do, but what's your action now? You know? So like you said, what did I inspire you to do? Are you going to show you're more empathetic to people that maybe in the past you weren't? Or what is it? Right.
I spoke in my town, there was like a travel basketball dinner and they asked me to come and speak. And I started this as a prompt from my wife. Cause she's like, she goes, ask them something, ask them what inspires them.
Mm.
And then I did that just as a way of getting up there and just, you know, you're dealing with little kids. So you want to engage them right away.
Right.
So they stay interested. So, you know, what inspires you in their name, you know, Jalen Brunson, Kobe Bryant, you know, Caitlin Clark. And I'm like, great. You know, that's great. If those people really get you to, these are little kids. Like, they love it. They're going to go out in the park and they're going to emulate these people. And it's inspiring. They're inspiring them. And at the end, somebody said, I'm going to try and inspire you a little bit. So I give my whole spiel and talk. And at the end of it, there was this little 8-year-old kid and he had glasses on in the front. And I said, anybody have any questions? And he raises his hand. And he goes, what inspires you?
Smart
kid. And I said, you know what? I said, my wife, Laura inspires me. You know, my son inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Pearl Jam inspires me.
There you go.
A sunny day inspires me.
Yeah.
Like anything that just gets me going to action, you know, like I say that, you know, when you talk about, you know, caregiver people in your life that help you.
Yeah.
Like them.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like wanting to be better for them. That's it's seeing what people do for you inspires me. And there's something about that. That topic, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's I didn't. And that's why I love the conversations is that I am blessed to have with people such as yourself. That's definitely an avenue of conversation that was not in my notes. And that's what I love about this. Like, I've always wanted to get people's perspectives. I'm not in an assist power chair equipment, etc. For my day job, I help people get medical equipment for nothing, for a nonprofit I work with. So I, every day, I'm inundated with stories that honestly, yes, they do inspire people dealing with struggle. It's not always just the basic things they need. This is could be the worst moment in their life all of a sudden, and now they need this equipment and they're financially struggling and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, wow. And you do. And you hear other people's stories. And I think, but then what do you do? You're just muddling through your same actions of any other day? Or are you actually going to do something about it? Are you just going to say thoughts and prayers? Or are you actually going to do something about it? You know, so it's like that taking action moment. And in most cases, from my perspective, is that when people have taken that decision, they don't look back. They continue. Because something triggered them, catapulted them forward, whatnot. And then that was that turning point, that decision that they made to keep going to do something else. Is that, do you find that your foundation, the Chris Greenwald Foundation, has that helped in that inspiring mission, you feel, at creating that foundation?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, like I've talked about how I've never even, prior to starting the foundation, I'd never even spoken to anyone with FSHD. And then I remember, you know, there was a woman that I started the organization with after, you know, originally having this moment with my wife where she was challenging me to get involved and do more. And then suddenly it was like, all right, well, I can't do anything for myself medically, but here's what I can do. I've always thought about starting a foundation and maybe be an example for other people that are going through the same thing. And maybe we can get involved in research and things like that. You know, who knows? I thought that maybe I'd have to, that was biting off more than I can chew. And then you end up finding out that I was able to make an impact. But I think then I kind of looked around and I connected with this woman, and she's the first person with FSHD that I've even spoken to. And then suddenly when I put my, and the whole idea was I'm going to put my name on something. Like no one had ever put their name on this disease. So if I'm going to come out and tell my story and talk about what I go through, I want to have a mechanism in place for people that are moved by me personally and my story to help. And then suddenly we put it out there, and I'm somebody that had never spoken to anyone with FSHD. Suddenly I'm on the phone with a 16-year-old kid in Alabama. Or I'm getting emails from people literally in South America, Europe, Asia. And I'm connecting with kids in Australia. And a family in Belgium comes to the United States and want to meet with me. And we take them on a tour of the arena. And I'm having a conversation with this family about a kid who's a teenager and maybe he's thinking about using a mobility device and what that's going to be about. Like, that was never something I did think that could be a residual effect of everything that I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And that's been so rewarding to be able to do that. So yeah, that was a major part of what we do. And yeah, you know, I never wanted this to be a business. I never wanted to put the pressure on myself to have to raise X amount of dollars to cover overhead. And I just want to, we do what we can do. We raise whatever money we can. We give it to the researchers we think are vital, or we help ourselves tell our story so that we can connect with more people and inspire those people to come out and talk about themselves and do whatever they can do and connect people. And that's what I think we've accomplished out in, you know, 15 years of doing this.
Yeah, that's what was one of my questions. And how many years has it been around? 15 years.
And this year.
Did you don't have the galas anymore?
We had been planning our, I think it was our ninth or, we started 2011. We were doing it every year up until COVID in 2020. Yeah. And then we canceled the one in 2020. It'd become a real heavy lift though. You know, it's again, I don't have a staff. We have just volunteers and people.
Bare bones.
So it became like me and my wife throwing a wedding for 400 people every year. It was hard. You got to convince people to buy tickets to it. And, and then the demographic changed of where our core supporters are coming from. People are getting, you know, younger people are getting older, moving away from specific areas. And so it became like where we do it became an issue. So, and then we always, the thing is we had gotten to a point though where we were still getting support. So even though we weren't having a gala, we were still raising a lot of money, just from supporters who just consistently donated a lot of money, and we were still able to fund real research and be impactful in that way, in that regard. So, and it becomes, well, wow, we're raising all this money and we're still doing the work we want to do, and we don't have the stress of a gala, so that's helpful. But this year we went out. My wife said, "Hey, we really should get together, get people together in person," and we did. And we had an event in back in May, and I use this term. I my wife and I like to share the things that we love with the people that we love. So we have a place that we love at Keyport, New Jersey, Drew's Bayshore Bistro. They had opened a new location a couple of years ago, and it's got this really cool vibe. We love New Orleans. This is like a real New Orleans style restaurant on the Jersey Shore, and gotten to be friendly with the owner chef. And years ago he beat Bobby Flay in a thing with his voodoo shrimp, so he became very well known down here, and the place is very well known. And he closed his restaurant on a Thursday night for us, and we had a little event there for 100 people. And it was fantastic. It was fantastic again to get people together. I'm able to speak and give my spiel and, move people emotionally in that way. Why it's why people come to our events. And then we, you know, then it's an excuse for people that maybe haven't donated in a while, even if they couldn't make it, they donated. And we raised enough where we can, we pay for another round of funding for, we teamed up with FSH friends out in Seattle, my friends Terry and Rick Colello, and they have a great scientific advisory board. And they said, "Hey, we have, we'll every year we'll probably co-fund something where they say, hey, we don't, we feel our advisory board said this is a good project, but we don't have the money to do it. Let's combine our forces and do it." So, again, Fran
That's
Sebdrup out
awesome.
at St. Louis University, we, funded a project that we were able to pay for with this last event. And that's what we tried to do. Fran is a guy, we have certain people that we have funded over the years that we believe in. And, he has a daughter with FSHD, and so we know that he's locked in to trying to help us, and so we want to keep him going. Just recently, talk about connecting people and stuff. I FSH Society has a sponsors the International Consortium, and they're doing it in Chicago this year, and I'm unable to go, but I had a researcher in India who had been accepted to present their findings out at the Research Consortium in Chicago, but she's a graduate student, didn't have the money to get there, so we connected, and I saw her research and met with her, and offered to bring her over, and
Nice.
so we can pay
Okay.
for that, and then you never know, she may become a force in trying to find a cure or treatment. And we helped her get here and
That's
kick
all you
that
need.
off. And I said, you're going to get to meet all these researchers, and maybe something clicks. Maybe you how many times we've funded just researchers now who have been offshoots of people we originally funded, coming out of the Scott Harper tree or the Peter Jones tree or, things like that. And then suddenly we're doing it and helping them get their own labs up and going. The Tapscott tree has so many great branches, and all people we funded in the past. So, trying to connect these people.
More irons in the fire, so to
Yeah.
speak, and more people involved in it. The research that you've seen grown over the years with your foundation, tell us about that growth that you've kind of witnessed, because I know, at least from my small view, it's grown tremendously. Yeah, how many more pharmaceuticals, researchers, et cetera, are in the space?
There when we started 2011, there were none. I mean, they had just discovered that DUX4 was the cause of the disease, so we knew there would start to be some interest. But you also knew that you had to make some inroads into research to get these pharmas. And now there's so many, and there's some that I can't even talk about because I've met with, and I'm not at liberty to talk about it. So that's, I think, should be hopeful for people with FSHD. And it's been great to even meet with some of these pharma companies where their researchers now get that personal feeling of, hey, talk about inspiring people. You know, I go to one and I speak to them, a bunch of scientists and people in this company, and now they suddenly have a face and a meaning to what their work is all about. That's really important, I think. And to see all these groups that are really working hard to try and develop something is hopeful. And I think, you know, how do you get through? Talk about how do you want to live day to day? How do I get through it? How do I not be frustrated or worried, anxiety filled with what's going to happen to me in 10 years? Well, I take hope in that there'll be something that's going to slow it down or reverse it. Got to hold that hope out. And yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And I think we will. I think as a society, especially when you talk about artificial intelligence and, you know, it's going to speed up the process so much. So there are negative parts of it, but I think on the positive side, I think you're going to see a lot of
Agreed.
compound advancement in science when it comes to dealing with diseases. Technology that'll help you be more independent. Like it's there, it's coming. So that makes you hopeful. And yeah.
The big award that you personally received on your career being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Talk about the Naismith Award that you received. When I read it, I was like, wow. Like I felt like a little bit, Chris, like that's a win for us. I'm not gonna lie. I'm not gonna
I'm
lie.
glad. Yeah, I had a lot of things going through my mind at that time. I mean, when you get that call from the CEO of the Hall of Fame, and it tells you, you know, you're going to the Hall of Fame. It's like it just overwhelms you in that moment. You know, I've always said I never understood when people win awards and they say they're humbled, because it's like, if anything, if you had humility, when they tell you that, you got to kind of think, well, man, I'm really that good? Like, so it's the opposite of humbling, but I understand what it means, because in the moment you go, there's no way I'm worthy of this. Like, really? No, come on. No, you're kidding me. There's no way I'm worthy of this. And then you get to understand it, and I know it's you go to you get things like that, you get awards like that and recognition like that. It's not about your resume. It's the resume is just a part of it, that you have to have, right? You've got to have the resume. But then I think there's got to be something else about you that it makes your life worthy of such an honor. And I get it, like what I've gone through and the challenges I've faced have maybe made what I've accomplished on my resume more impressive. And I had that doubt of a little bit of am I getting this because people feel sorry for you or anything like that? And I just had so many people just reach out to me and be like, hey, you're getting this for the how your career and who you are as a person. It's all a part of it. It's who I am. I mean, I can't run from who what I've done with the foundation, what we've done having a progressive muscle disease, and then also, you know, having 25 years as the voice of a team, and being told by my peers and by my colleagues and by kids who reach out to me who want to get in the business, how much I've influence them, and they tell you how great you are, and you go, all right, well, I guess, yeah, it's so. I think, you know, I got this award a couple of years ago from the NBA called the Values of the Game Award,
Look at that.
and that is another thing that's all encompassing, and you realize at that moment you feel seen, I've always been the type that's doesn't even with my play-by-play, I'm not the type that calls attention to myself. It's about the game. I don't have some signature call. To me, it's about the audience and the game. And but you do so you go, I'll just do great work. I'm not going to worry about accolades. And I think that's the way you have to approach everything. When I got that Values of the Game award, it was like, wow, like I thought nobody even realized what I was going through or what I was doing. And then suddenly they are. And you feel like, wow, somebody's seeing what I'm doing. Somebody is seeing it. So don't think that it's like not being noticed. It's not going unnoticed. And then when you get this and you look at all the great names that have won the Naismith, the Kirk Gowdy Award from the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, including my the guy who taught me in college
Oh,
to
wow.
be a play-by-play guy, Marty Glickman, who was the first ever winner of the award after Kirk Gowdy. And to think of the pride he would have to see me end up on that list, you know, this freshman who showed up in his workshop at Fordham at WFUV, it's special. And, you know, it's special to get a call from my friend Bill Raftery, who won it once, and my big brother Mike Breen, who had won this award, and you know, getting a text from Marv Albert, like that's a kid growing up in New York, like 10 years, 12 years old, listening to Marv on the radio, and then getting to know him over the years, and then getting that congratulations, you know, you're part of this club now with me. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. And I hope it shows people out there that you have to have the talent. You have to have the ability. Like you gotta, it doesn't mean that if you have if you're in a wheelchair, you have FSHD or some other type of muscular dystrophy, or you have MS, or you have cerebral palsy, anything that's, or you have something that's unseen.
Sure.
Early stage FSHD, depression, anxiety, ADHD, something that you nobody can see. But you think that it's beyond your control, so it's going to prevent me from achieving things that I want to achieve in my life. I want this to be a message to people that if you have the ability, you don't, a disability doesn't need to stop you from achieving your dreams.
Do you
I
think
know.
then it does it mean that you just have to pivot it? Adapt?
If it's not possible, like, you know, I can still do the game. The thing that changed for me was getting there. And you think it may, you can't do it, well, you find a way. Like you figure it out. You ask for help. People want to help you. And you find a way to get there and do the job. But if you can't do the job, if you don't have the ability to do the job, then
Doesn't matter then what you have,
no,
right?
I mean, I can't. I maybe as a kid, I want to play center field for the Yankees. But there comes a moment where a lot of people, not just disability preventing me from this, but a lot of things prevent you from doing it. But it doesn't mean you can't. Like that's the thing. Like if you have the ability, it doesn't mean you're going to do it. It doesn't mean every kid who wants to be a basketball broadcaster is going to get to the Hall of Fame. The odds of you getting there are infinitesimal. Doesn't matter if you're in a wheelchair or not. But if you're in a wheelchair, doesn't mean you can't. That's the distinction. Doesn't mean you can't.
And that to me is the inspiring part of it. It's not the fact that you achieved to do a job that you're very good at and for a long period of time and doing what you're called to do feels like to me, at least from the outside, like when you hear Chris Carino call a game, it's like, yeah, this is what this guy was born here to do. He was born to do this. He was born to do this. And he's like, he loves it. He accepts it. You can hear it. Like you're right there. And to be recognized for it. And as you said, humbly, but rightfully so, though, right? I mean, you should be, because you're doing what you were born to do, you know?
Yeah, and well, and you know, that's any great achievement. You have to have that fire,
right?
You know, you have to have that talent and ability, and also it's not just talent and ability.
Right.
There's a lot of talented people. There's a lot of able people. You got to have that passion. There's a lot of people with passion don't have the talent. There's a lot of people with talent don't have the passion. If you can combine those two things, you have a very good chance.
Right. Absolutely.
Because there's a lot of other luck goes into it.
Yeah, for sure.
But you had a chance.
But, it, you know, and there is like, yeah, I agree there's luck or situations that you find yourself in, but ultimately you're taking advantage of those situations by feeding into the passion, what you're called to do, and then you do it really well, and then more people recognize it, and then, you know, one thing leads to the next.
Yeah.
And then there you are, like you're down that road even farther, or you're doing something even bigger than you thought you were going to do. Yeah, it's just, that's inspiring. I'm going almost full circle. You know?
Going back to what I said about it, you should aspire to be inspiring.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, who wouldn't want to help people? Like, who wouldn't want to live their life as an example that other people look at and go, I want to be better.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I can get through life better. I want to help other people. If they look at you and that's what the result is, then it's not up to you. Like, people that don't want people to say they're inspiring, it's like, it's not up to you.
Yeah, that's true.
It's up to them. But live the best you can. And yeah, if you make somebody want to be better, great. Like, that's what life should be about.
Man, this is good. I think you have to be one of those self-help people too. Maybe that's your other career.
You know, I just think of, you know, people always say to me, you should be speaking at this. And I do. I do speak at play. And it's one of those things. You have to also look at your, I always say, whenever you're going to do stuff, you got to look at your quality of life, right? So I don't know if I necessarily want to be in 30 cities a month, you know, 10 cities in a month. Like I already do that with my job. And that's another thing. It's like my job I do because I love it. If you get inspired by me, great. But I don't care what happens. Anybody else, I want to do it because I love it.
Right.
And that's what's going to keep me going. But yeah, I've always looked at these people on the internet. And again, they're trying to inspire people, like self-help people and things like that. Like, again, that's a great thing. If somebody's trying to inspire people to be better, it's great. I don't know. I've always looked at it like, I'm just being out there. I'm going to show you out there what I'm doing. And if you get inspired by that, terrific. I'm going to live. And part of the foundation and part of what I'm doing is, like, part of my wife and I have had to, we're kind of private people, but at the same time, you know, we know that by sharing our experiences and the things we go through, our story, that's going to help other people. So we'll sacrifice a little privacy to do that. And we understand it's important and it's good. But I never want to come across of like, I've got it all together.
Yeah.
Like, I get as frustrated as anybody. I get as downtrodden as the next guy. My relationship with anybody, it's not perfect. Like, I'm a human being like everybody else. I don't know. Maybe I just downplay what I've been able to accomplish, but I don't want to look like I'm some expert on happiness and positivity and inspiration. I'm just a regular person, and I've got all these other feelings, but I do have a perspective on life that I have gotten over the years of living with this disease. I like to think some of it would have happened regardless, but I have this perspective because of it. And in a situation like this where I can share it and other people hopefully take something from it, that's what it's all about for me. And maybe I'll do more, and I will speak to people, and Just do my thing, but that's what it's all about.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I definitely appreciate you being here, sharing all this. It is inspiring. Can't hit that point home, I don't think, hard enough. What you've accomplished in your career, what you continue to do. Thanks, Chris, for being here, sharing your story again with us. Take a look, follow the foundation, ChrisCarinoFoundation.org. Congratulations again on your Hall of Fame induction. I think it should have came sooner. That's just me, but I mean, you're doing great things. It's just great to have you part of our community. And thanks for being here to share it.
Thank you, Tim. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Thanks again, Chris, for joining us. So glad that he came on. I was excited to set that up. One of the things we were trying to do is obviously organize it or get it on the schedule, and kind of orchestrating that with the end of the NBA season. So I hope the Nets become maybe your second team, maybe your first team. Don't know if you're an NBA fan or not. It doesn't really matter. It's fun to listen to him on the broadcast. It was great to talk to him today. There's so many things that word we talked about that inspire. Do you aspire to inspire people? The amazing path that we are all on, and that's really what it is. And that's all of us, not just those that have FSHD, but those in the world. I was talking to my wife the other day, like, I don't understand people that have a job, even though I can respect it, that it's just their job. They do it, they grind it out, that's it. I'm like, I need more. I need it to mean something. I need it to get me some, get myself somewhere in a good place, or help someone else, or I don't know. And it took me a long time to find a job, my day job, that does offer that. It's still not it. And this podcast is fun. I love doing it. It's not my job, but I love doing it. And when the recording was done, me and Chris had a couple moments to talk after. And he said, what we all do is important. How you reach out to people, the connections you make, the ability to tell your story. You have no idea what impact that leaves on somebody else. Gets them out of the closet, as he said, or gets them out of that gray space mentally, maybe, or inspires them. And I think we all have a responsibility to do that for each other. And I think this episode really keyed in on that. It was fun talking about broadcasting and sports and going through his day, but I think we went way beyond that. And I really hope that this episode helps you in whatever path you are and what point of your path you are in your life. To keep going. It's tough not to have life just be this grind, especially when you have this disease or any disease for that matter. And I believe everyone in the world has a something, at least one. We're all coping with that. And what do we do? And how do we do it? And how do we get through? It's difficult. And no one said it would be easy. And easy is not what we're looking for. For me, what I'm looking for is, what does it mean? What am I doing? How am I helping? I think Chris saw that right away in his life. And the people in his life to help him get to that Hall of Fame career as a broadcaster, what he shared with us today. And he continues that path to help, I think, inspire people. If you want to help inspire people and share your story here, please email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. You can follow me on social and so forth. Yeah, I'm an old dude. I'm on Facebook and whatnot. Feel free to do that. Love to talk with you. I've had people reach out, and I've met them even and had lunch and like talk and see anything I can do just to help and share. I'm there for you to do that. Email me. We can make a connection for sure. If you want to be on the show, nominate someone. Don't forget to follow the podcast as well on the places that you listen to it, and tell your friends about it. I think these stories can help people. These messages can help people, not just in our community of FSHD, but beyond. And for that, I'll always be very grateful. Visit ChrisCarinoFoundation.org as well. And thank you all for listening to the show. This has been the FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. Take care.